Welcome to Career Tools. This is Wendy.
And this is Amanda.
Today's cast, Time Management and the High C, part 2 of 2.
The questions that this cast answers are, what are High C's weaknesses when it comes to time management? What can High C's do to mitigate their weaknesses? And how can High C's improve their time management skills?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
If you're at the start of your career journey, our new Career Tools license is designed just for you. We understand the challenges of landing your first job and building professional relationships, so we've tailored it just for you. Our interviewing series covers everything from preparation to closing the deal, helping you stand out in every interview. Countless people have credited this series with helping them secure their dream jobs. A strong, secure relationship with your first boss can accelerate your career. Our Effective Relationship series reveals the secrets to building and maintaining critical connections. And our podcast content, whether you need personal productivity, presentation skills, or any other area, will provide targeted content and expert support to help you start your career with confidence. No matter where you are, we provide the on-ramp to your career path. Start strong and set yourself up for success with the right resources at your fingertips. Visit us online at manager-tools.com/licenses to learn more today.
So Amanda, last week we talked to the High C's about involving people and lowering their standards. And hopefully by now they've recovered from that shock of the idea of lowering their standards. And now this week we are going to talk about High C's and time management and getting out of their own way. And we're going to start with speeding up decision-making.
When talking about speeding up decision-making, we know that high C's tend to make slow decisions, just like high S's, but they do it for different reasons. High S's want to make sure that they've included the views of every person involved and won't move forward until they're sure that everyone is happy with the decision. That's why high S's tend to move slowly. Now, high C's, they want to make sure that they have every piece of data and won't move forward until they are sure that they have considered every possible number or analytic result. This also includes any factors involved. They know how to play both sides. They look and consider that in the process when it comes to any decision making. So it takes them a long time to make it. That's why it seems slower to the other half of the world.
Because they get stuck in one side or other. Either they're waiting for the final piece of data that will make them be sure that they're making the right decision, or they've received so much information that they're paralyzed by analysis. And in either situation, they can't move forward.
As with involving people, one solution is to set deadlines on decision-making. So we talked earlier about involving people and having to essentially set up a checks and balances that you're checking in with the people that you're working with. And you have to do this as well with decision-making. You need to implement a rule that no matter how much data you have, a decision must be made at a certain time or after a certain amount of time has passed. This can be made easier if the decision is reversible. For example, paying extra for a cancelable hotel. If you have to make the decision earlier, then you want to be to make it. This could be a good compromise strategy. So if there's limited risk, you can make those decisions earlier.
Yeah, and or you could set a limit on the number of data sources or the amount of data that you would consider for each decision. Like, I'm only going to consider these three high quality data sources. And once I've got those, I'm not looking at anything else. Another strategy, we're going to go back to reduce your standards, which is... We should tell people not to drive when we say things like this. So decide in advance what good enough looks like in terms of the information you need to make a decision. So, for example, if you have to gather quotes for a project and you have 4 out of 5 of the quotes that you sent out, is that enough to make a decision right now? Or do you have to wait for 5 quotes? Is that somehow in the rules of, you know, if you work in government, sometimes the rule is you have to have 5 quotes before you can make a determination. Knowing that ahead of time is useful, knowing that what the standard is. Alternatively, you can determine which pieces of data are the most important. So if you buy a house, the maxim is location, 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 because the location of the house matters way more than anything else. Like, it doesn't matter if you have four bedrooms or three. I guess it does matter if you have four bedrooms or three. But if the house is in the wrong location, that overcomes everything else. So if you think about that, the decisions you make or the projects you work on, what is the equivalent of location for you? What is the one thing that, if it is wrong, if you make the wrong decision, throws everything else out? Knowing what that is helps you make a decision faster, because you, once you've got that piece of information, you know you can go ahead.
Yeah, I like to call that like a deal breaker.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I can do this, but if this occurs, that's a deal breaker. And sometimes you have to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a deal breaker, it's now you know. But think about that ahead of time. In software and product development worlds, there are a number of frameworks used to prioritize and decide which features are the most important. So some of these include SWOT analysis. This is your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. The Moskow method, your must-haves, your should-haves, your could-haves, your won't-haves. The Kano model, this is used for classifying product features based on customer satisfaction. And the WSJF, weighted shortest, job first. This is used in agile development. So these are different softwares that have been produced to help you essentially analyze these decisions that you need to make. So if you don't want to do it on your own, leverage these.
And if you're used to using those at work, sometimes you can use them to make decisions on your own. Usually they're used for entire projects. Often, if you're used to using them, you know how to adapt them to a single decision. One other solution that will work especially well for a high C, because it's data-driven, is to conduct a cost-benefit analysis of further research. So if you look at the value of additional information against the cost of the delayed action, you may well find that further research will not significantly improve the quality of the decision that you're making. And that can help you overcome the tendency to overanalyze and delay decisions. All you have to do, of course, is to commit to following whatever the cost-benefit analysis tells you. You can't do the cost-benefit analysis and then it says, go ahead, and you say, yeah, but no, right? It's like having a coin flip and then saying, yeah, no, I'm not going to go with it. You have to.
I just did that coin flip for you, not for me, exactly. Right? Nope, not today.
Yeah. So if you're going to use one of these techniques in order to help you make a decision, then you have to commit to making the decision when the technique tells you what the answer is.
Remember, we're not trying to optimize every decision. We're trying to optimize the best use of time that we have. That potentially means making decisions in a shorter time than we're more comfortable with. So the goal is not to make the perfect decision every time, but to make good decisions efficiently.
Starting on October 29th, we are so excited to bring you our virtual EMC with live Spanish translation. We know that we can reach more of you by providing content to other languages, and we're ready to do just that, starting with our virtual EMC. Sign up online at manager-tools.com/training and join us over Zoom starting October 29th at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Okay, resistance to change. So high C's and high S's, again, have resistance to change in common. And this probably appears to be the same on the outside. So if someone's looking at a team from the outside and they have a high S and a high C, they both look like they're resisting change, but the root causes differ. So the high S resistance to change is driven by their need for stability and their dislike of disruption. For a high C, it stems from their need for accuracy and quality and certainty. So they want to be certain that what comes out of this change is as good as what they have right now.
And since part of the source of the high C's resistance to change is their uncertainty about the outcome, getting more information about what is changing, how it will affect them, and what outcome will make sense as a mitigating strategy, right? However, as a high C, you will still be fighting against your nature, which will always want to take more time for research than is reasonable, and you will want more information that is then is available. So awareness is really half of the battle here. You're working against your tendencies, and now that you've heard it, we've said it, you're aware, but now you have to have a little bit more self-awareness, right?
Because yeah.
We can tell you all we want, but actually internalizing that is different, and that's okay. Just take some time.
Yeah. So one thing you can do is schedule the time to do the research that you want to do and time limit it. So that will prevent something that you can't change. If change is coming and somebody else in the organization has decided that something is going to change, then time limiting the amount of research you can do is one way to stop it taking over everything else that you're doing. And one strand of research you can do is to establish exactly what's changing and how it affects the elements where quality and accuracy is most important to you. So, for example, if your boss is changing, there's obviously going to be some changes to reporting and routines. Those are two places where quality and accuracy are probably important to you. Obviously, if they want new reports, you want to know that you can provide those reports, that they are accurate, that they provide the level of data that you think the boss should have, and so on. But in the short term, most managers will want to maintain the status quo. And so the only thing you need to focus on initially is establishing a relationship with this new boss. So you might want to do some research on LinkedIn to find out their background, or you might want to talk to some colleagues who've worked with them before. And you can do that in an hour or two if you're already, you know, scheduled to have lunch with those colleagues, because you're networking and you're keeping up other relationships. And so you've got an idea of what this boss likes and how they work. And then you're developing that relationship, because actually the reports and the routines and all of that stuff will come later, because most bosses don't walk in and change everything immediately because they don't know what's going on. So they can't change everything immediately.
On the other hand, if a system is being changed, you might want to investigate what that means for your own process, how they will change, and how you'll obtain the necessary outputs. Note that this is not an exercise in finding ways to prove that your outputs will be poorer and therefore that the new system should not be introduced. So what we're telling you is, don't look for ways to say no to the new process, because that's going to be your first reaction, because your process is the best. Yeah, because you spent time on it. And that's, again, why folks are more seen as resistant to change in the high C. It's you're not trying to find holes in the new process, but you're trying to find out and research what that means for your process itself if a new system is being put into place. So it's more of an exercise in using a reasonable amount of time to determine how to work within the new system to produce outputs of acceptable quality. Instead of spending days or weeks worrying about it or being concerned about it, which this results in very little productive work. This could turn into days of work, but again, limit yourself by giving yourself specific times and objectives. For example, find out how to replicate X report between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. on Thursday. Plan ahead.
Another way to make change more palatable for high C's is to view it as an experiment. Propose a hypothesis, choose your measures, write down your method, and measure the outcome. Change the factors and do it again. This is what high I's would call gamification, but high C's are way too sensible for that. So the last one we have is maintain an efficient pace. And high C's can easily find themselves behind on a project or left behind in their career because their idea of an efficient pace of work is not the same as those of the people around them.
The high C, and to some extent the high S, measures their output by different standards than the high D and high I do. The high C wants to know that the work has been done with absolute accuracy. They will check and double check their work. They will add to their emails, clarifying their point, and then add another bullet and clarify again. They will send emails with attachments, spreadsheets, with macros that should be updated twice, and reams of data to back up their points.
And the problem with this is they spend all this time doing the work and it's not valued by the other styles. Hence, my dad makes perfect furniture and I don't value the time he puts into it. The high D just wants the bottom line. The high I and the high S would rather have a conversation. And while the high C is taking the time to perfect their work, others are doing more each week, each month, each year, and that is having an impact on the high C's career.
Using the techniques we discussed earlier to decide what the standard should be for each piece of work will help, as will speeding up the decision-making. One more technique is to produce a bad first draft and iterate on it, rather than trying to achieve perfection on the first try.
And high C's are good at planning. So leverage that skill to help you plan and be efficient with your time and see if you're falling behind. Knowing what your yearly goals are, breaking them down into smaller chunks and measuring your progress will help you keep up, as long as you don't fall into the trap of working on your system more than you're working in your system. Don't constantly tweak your system or make new systems, make new plans. You have to make a plan and then work the plan so that you're actually doing the work. But if you can do that, you are good at making plans and you will keep up.
In addition, use your technology. High C's are usually the people who know how to use their tools and softwares best to automate repetitive tasks and data verification. So let the machines do what they're good at. And if you ever need to know, again, what these are, ask your high C's, because they know. So do you utilize it? Work smart.
Yes.
Right?
Definitely. Being a high C is not a strength or a weakness any more than being a high D, an I, or an S is. All that label means is that we have a set of natural behaviors that may or may not support our effectiveness in a specific situation. We can change those behaviors anytime we like. All we have to do is think about it first. And using our time effectively means we can do more work, serve more people. And if that means acting like some of the other styles some of the time, or lowering your standards sometimes, then it's worth it. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.